Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Mikey's Indy 500. I am your host, Mikey Manfredi, and thank you for all for joining me on another lap on my race through the independent wrestling scene. This week is a very special week, though, because I have a very special guest, none other than my co-host on Hit the Books, Ryan Knightsey. Ryan, how are you doing today?
Hey, everybody. I'm doing well, Mikey. I was watching a bunch of independent wrestling matches, and, you know, you asked me to come on here. Come on. Stop booking my amazing flagship show, Monday Night Raw, and to come on here and, you know, watch some independent wrestling matches. And, I'm excited to come on here. I've been listening to the show for a long time, and I'm excited to, like, you know, get my give you some matches and receive some matches to watch.
Yes.
Does that give away the spoilers of how the show is?
No, that's fine. It's a great segue, actually. So, what me and Ryan
It's did, almost like I do a podcast or something.
Right? It's like we have experience in this or something. So, what we did was we decided to give each other 10 matches to watch. So, I gave Ryan 10 matches that I thought were good, and then Ryan gave me 10 matches that he thought I should watch, and we kind of reviewed each other, so we gave each other a little bit of a little Secret Santa of wrestling matches, and it was very fun. I got to watch some matches I probably never would have watched on my own or found on my own, and I'm very happy for that because these matches were awesome.
Yeah, and I would agree with that same sentiment. There was a couple matches that, whether they were already in my queue or I just did not, they weren't even on my radar or whatever, or matches. There's a couple matches in here where I've seen actually before, but like seeing them later and getting like a little refresher on stuff is kind of also nice to enjoy. But yeah, I'm very excited to go through this list, Mikey.
Yeah, me too, for sure. So you want to jump right into it?
Yeah, whenever you're ready.
All right, so I'm going to start us off today, and I'm going to start us off with a match from Ring of Honor, none other than CM Punk versus AJ Styles for the Pure title at Second Anniversary. This match, Ryan, was sick. I loved it. I really liked the three rope breaks rule, but I did kind of expect it was going to lead to a little bit of shitting around in the beginning where they were just trying to get each other's rope breaks gone, which I noticed there was a lot of like really random spots that didn't really look like rope breaks to me, but they countered them anyway, which was weird. But as soon as all the rope breaks were gone, the match really turned on, and it ended up being really, really awesome. I'd love to hear a little bit of your thoughts on this match as well, if you've seen it.
This is one of the matches I haven't seen yet. Literally, Ring of Honor has recently been putting up a bunch of their archive onto YouTube, and this was one of the matches that, like, just recently went up that I saw, and I was like, ooh, I want to watch that match. So I haven't gotten the chance to watch it yet. But I saw, I was like, oh, that looks like a great match. In question, Mikey, did the match explain what the Pure Championship is or what the special rules were around the Pure Championship?
It did a little bit, but I don't really remember that well because I was kind of trying to focus on the match and I wasn't really listening to commentary too hard.
Yeah,
but
it was.
They did explain a little bit.
I think the rules are like, like you said, three rope breaks, and that's it.
It was three rope breaks, 20 count outside the ring instead of a 10 count.
Mm-hmm. And then, like, no closed fist punches to the face.
Yes. So it's your basic wrestling rules, except the three rope break thing and the 20 count are a little different.
They add a different dynamic to a match, to the show, really.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And since this match wasn't as long as I would... This match was pretty short for the two people that were in the ring.
So one other thing about the Pure Wrestling title that I just remembered. They can change hands on the DQ or count out.
That's very interesting.
Sorry, you were saying.
I lost my train of thought.
Okay, well, it's coming around the bend. Choo-choo-choo. There we go.
Okay, so the three rope break thing is interesting, but it does, since the match was shorter than I expected, it did add to, it took away from the whole match itself, because like I said in the beginning, it was a lot of them kind of putting each other in weird holds and getting each other into weird situations where they had to rope break. I'm going to put it in quotes because there was a few that were a little iffy. I wouldn't call them rope breaks, but they had to move the rope breaks out of there somehow. Because it does end up getting it does end up being important later in the match that they're both out of rope breaks. But this match was great. It really felt like a fight. These two took it outside. There was great outside brawling, and I really liked it. I gave this match 4 meatballs out of 5. I was very much into it, and I think you'll love it too. You'll watch it when you get the chance for sure.
So Ring of Honor, not only are they adding a bunch of stuff to the archive, but they were planning to bring back the Pure title. Because Ring of Honor, you know, they, after a little bit, when they started trying to become more like a WWE sort of feeder sort of thing, well, not feeder, but WWE sort of style, I guess, they got rid of the Pure title. I don't remember what the reasoning was. I think it was just because, like, maybe the rules were too confusing, or just because, let's just have a title. But it might have been because they got rid of that and started introducing the TV title. I don't remember. Either way, they are now apparently bringing back the Pure title. So knowing that, Mikey, are you interested to see more Pure title matches down the line, or did you care about it at all?
No, I'm definitely interested in seeing more of these Pure title matches because of the different rules. I think it adds a new dynamic to a wrestling match that I never would have expected before. And I really do like the limited amount of rope breaks. I just wish in this match it seemed like they were definitely focused on just getting rid of the rope breaks as fast as possible so they can get on with the match in this one. But I feel like if it's done right and the pacing is really good of it, I think it could lead to some big moments, and it could be really sweet when each only has 3 rope breaks, because it won't keep leading to chicken shit heels just grabbing your ropes every time they're stuck in a hold.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
So yeah, I definitely am excited to see more of this. Like I said, 4 out of 5 meatballs, great match. Go watch it, free on YouTube. Watch it if you can. You too, Ryan. Talking to you, and I'm talking to the fans.
Oh god, these are threats. Is it my turn now?
Yeah. What's your first match?
The first match that you gave me, Mikey, was a triple threat from Lucha Underground with Phoenix taking on Pentagon Jr. and Drago. Let me look at my notes here. This was season 1, episode 3. This is, in fact, actually the first time that these three characters ever showed up on Lucha Underground. So it's like very interesting to see a baby Phoenix, Pentagon, Drago.
Yeah.
A little bit. Especially
what I liked about Lucha Underground is seeing Phoenix and Pentagon in a fighting each other rather than being on a team.
Mm-hmm. They rarely interacted in Lucha Underground. So what I was going to say was that these three competitors obviously become like a huge important part, especially Phoenix and Pentagon, become a huge important part to the lore of Lucha Underground. But Phoenix and Pentagon, I think, if I remember correctly, after season 1, they never really, like, feuded, but, like, after season 1, they, like, barely interacted with each other ever.
Interesting.
Which is very interesting, and I think it's mainly because of the route that Pentagon Jr. goes on throughout the story of Lucha Underground that really sort of drives that. But, yeah, this is the first time they ever appeared on this match. I thought it was a good match. I thought it was a really, really good match. It was a solid, you know, this was probably... I would have to look at what the other matches were in the first 2 episodes of Lucha Underground, but like this was probably the most like AAA Lucha style match that started in Lucha Underground.
Mm-hmm.
I know the main event to the first episode was Johnny Mundo versus Ricochet.
That match was excuse you.
Yes, that Prince match Boom. Was great. Prince Boom. No. who's Ricochet? I don't know. Who's Richard O'Shea? But I thought this was great. I thought this was a great really match. At one point, Matt Stryker, the announcer, calls, who is it? I believe Pentagon Jr. goes for a sling blade on Phoenix, and he calls it, instead of a sling blade, he calls it a Tanahashi, which was, I thought was a really great little reference.
Yes, I actually watched a little bit of this match before I sent it your way, and I remember that, and I thought it was neat.
It was just like, oh, okay, that's kind of fun. And granted, this was, 2014, I believe, is what this match came out. So, oh boy, this is six years ago.
He had that great line in your Lucha Underground match, and spoiler alert, I also have a Lucha Underground match, and his best line was, oh shit, that was dope!
I thought Matt Stryker at times can be sort of tiring, but I think in the Lucha Underground environment, he was such a great announcer.
Yeah, he's definitely interesting. He says a lot of things. Some of them aren't great. Some of them are awesome. He's very swingy in my eyes. I felt
that him and Vampiro did a decent job, like in Lucha Underground. And I think, obviously, they get it better going the seasons that it goes together. You know, seasons as they go, I should say. But like, I felt that for Lucha Underground, they fit perfectly. Phoenix at one point jumps off of Dario Cueto's office in a crossbody to Pentagon and Drago to the floor, which I thought was great. Phoenix eventually gets the victory, which cemented him in my eyes as, like, this is the guy, this is the star of Lucha Underground. Like, Phoenix is, like, essentially, the baby face of Lucha Underground. He's, probably the secondary baby face after Prince Puma, but he's, like, definitely, it's, like, he is one of the guys up there. Like I said, it was crazy to watch Lucha Underground in the beginning. So, at the beginning, it's, like, very much like, oh, this is a wrestling TV show that has a bunch of lucha craziness on it, but as the show continues, it unravels into this crazy, insane world where, like, death is coming to life, and there are time travelers, and there's a bunch of other random stuff.
I started watching Lucha Underground, and I need to get more into it because of that. I feel like it gets wild, and I haven't even scratched the surface.
Right before we did this show, right before you sent me all these matches, I literally just finished season 3. And season 3 is when they introduce this, like, gauntlet that can make whoever wields it, like, have this most, like, the Tower of the Gods.
The Gift of the Gods tournament, right?
The Gift of the Gods tournament is for a title.
Okay.
This is a gauntlet.
Interesting. Oh, so it's for the Infinity Gauntlet.
It's basically the Infinity Gauntlet that gives you all this power, and it basically turns people heel.
Incredible.
Because they succumbed to the power of the gauntlet by wearing it. But yeah, it was crazy to watch Lucha Underground as, like, a normal wrestling show before it kicks off into all that stuff. Like I said, it was a solid Lucha Libre match that showcased each competitor's ability. This is one of the matches where, like, I became sort of a favorite of Drago, because Drago has this, like, amazing, like, drape over DDT, which is really cool looking. Mm-hmm. And plus, Drago comes out and he has, like, this disgusting, like, black
tongue. Oh, yeah,
tongue.
The gross goo that he just drips out of his mouth whenever he comes in. It's great.
It's great. Yeah, this match definitely started early Lucha Underground with a bang, in my opinion. And I ended up giving it 3.25 meatballs.
Nice. Not bad, not bad.
Yeah, it was a very solid match. I think, like, as an opener to Lucha Underground, I think it's really good. Because obviously it's like, they're not, you know, what's great about, like, 5-star matches is, like, you know the build and everything. Here it's like, we're just starting out. We're just setting the table, really. So I thought this was a solid match to start Lucha Underground.
So for all the fans who have been listening, Ryan, I just want to let you know right now that Ryan's 3.5 or 3.25 is very different than Mikey's 3.25.
Oh, yeah.
We rate on a very different scale.
Yeah, I talked to Mikey about this before, where it's like his rating scale is really about what he feels, excitement levels, emotionally about a match.
If a match is making me scream and jump out of my seat and, like, really, like, I just get into it and don't think about anything else, like one of the matches on this card, then it's, for me, it's like easy 5. Like, if it gets that emotional response out of me, it's 5. No doubt.
Whereas me, I'm like the harsh critical analysis analytical one that's like, I have rarely given out like five stars and stuff. Like I'm very much like more of like I there is the emotional parts of me that bring it out, but I very much come into it like I'm watching, like studying a movie or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's what I like about us, Mikey, is that we're able to have those two different view types when it comes to matches, because yeah. I think it adds a lot of stuff.
I just like watching wrestling, and then if it makes me pop, I'm very in on the match. If I'm bored, then I give it a lower rating. Like
exactly.
Some matches, I find myself like checking my phone a little bit, and I'm like, oh, about it. It's not into this one. But like, there's other matches where I like have to like toss. I'm like, I just can't focus on anything else.
Oh, 100%.
All right, so. Before I move on to the next match, I forgot to say that in my first match, AJ Styles does pick up the victory over CM Punk in the end.
Going Styles.
And winning the pure title, I think it was.
Yes.
So my second match is a match from Stardom. It is Mayu Iwatani versus Kagetsu. This match was absolutely buck wild. These two were awesome. I love this. It was for the World of Stardom title match, so it was. It definitely had that big fight feel.
Mm-hmm.
And these two definitely put everything they had in this match. They were throwing literally like their entire playbooks just at each other throughout this mm-hmm. whole match. Like they were beating each other with every move they knew. And it ruled. I loved every second of it. There was parts where I was like baffled. And it was when Kagetsu pulled out two different mists in the match. Mm-hmm. Two different colored mists throughout the match, and I was like, how did you even, when did you, huh? Like,
yeah.
Like, there was...
Yeah, it was great. It was honestly so good.
There was a part, it was after Iwatani took the red mist, I believe, there was a part where it looked like Iwatani was going for a German, and I was like, oh shit, Kagetsu had her cheeks all puffed up, and I was like, oh shit, did she have more mist in her mouth? When did that even happen? And then she spit it out, and it was blue. And I was like, "Why did she get a different mist?" Like,
she's... yeah.
Like, not only did she pull out mist twice, it was two different ones, and I didn't see like a spot in the match where she could have possibly done that. Like, put that in her mouth. Like, it was wild. I really liked it. And don't the different mists have like different effects? Like, isn't there like a scale of how powerful they all are?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'm not sure.
I think there is. I saw it somewhere, and I need to know if it exists. I need to know. Asian mist. Let's see.
Oh no! This feels like canceled territory.
Okay. These are the mist properties. Green. The commonly used mist, which is used to obstruct the opponent's vision. Red, quite often used, but it's said to burn the eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Black is said
fire.
Black is said to blind the opponent for several weeks.
Oh yeah.
Blue sends the opponent to sleep.
Interesting.
Yellow.
Okay.
Yellow
very
paralyzes the opponent. And purple causes momentary distraction and memory loss.
Wow.
So different mists apparently have different effects on the match, which I thought was very interesting. When I saw different colors, I was like, oh shit, she's really trying to fuck her up this time, huh?
Oh my god, yeah.
Yeah, but this match...
Yeah,
was...
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, I saw this match when I was on my Kagetsu kick, and I was like, this is a great match. I really wanted you to watch it. And it's like, you know, we watch AEW, we watch like Riho and Hikaru Shida, and we remember we watched at... All Double or Nothing the first time around with that big Joshi six woman tag match, and it's like, oh yeah, this is awesome. Stardom, many would argue, is like the pinnacle of Joshi in Japan. I mean, that's obviously an arguable point, so you can obviously disagree with me, but this was at their year end climax 2019. I thought
it
was not
watched enough Joshi to disagree with you, so I'm not gonna.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. But I saw this match, and I was like, this was just a great match. It was a huge title match. It was obviously Mayu Iwatani, who was great in Kagetsu. Mikey, I don't know if you know this, but if I'm getting my timeline correctly, the next day, which is largely the reason why I was on my Kagetsu kick, was that the next day, Kagetsu, after this match, announced she was retiring.
Interesting.
And then so then she retired in February after, and this match took place in December.
Interesting.
So this was literally, it's like she, you talk about putting out an all out banger. It's like she knew that this was her last title match.
Oh, absolutely. This was absolutely a banger. There was huge, huge, they put it all on the line. There were spots in the crowd where Kagetsu like jumped off of a really, like, it like did like a double stomp to Mayu Iwatani while she was in the stands. Like, it was wild. They threw everything they had at each other. I will say, though, in the end, Mayu Iwatani does end up winning. Just as a heads up. I keep forgetting to say the winner of the matches, and I need to stop doing that.
No, I really wanted you to watch this match because it was like, I wanted you to watch more Stardom because I knew how much of a fan you were of like that Joshi match in Double or Nothing and watching Hikaru Shida and Riho. I was like, Mikey's got to watch some more Stardom. And of course, you know, I think Stardom, I'm not sure if they have English commentary yet, but they recently just got like bought out. No, they got bought by Bushiroad, which is the same people of New Japan Pro Wrestling. Mm. So it's like they'll definitely be around for a while. And maybe it'll expand and get English commentary and whatnot. But, you know, they like upload like a match or two a week, obviously with Japanese commentary. But I honestly, it's like the Japanese commentary doesn't take it away from me. It's just like, oh, this is still great to watch. Mm. So I really wanted you to watch it because I was like, this is a fucking banger.
So I watched this with Japanese sub with a Japanese commentary, and I tried to put subtitles on, and I auto translated the subtitles that were in Japanese, and it led to some very funny captions.
Oh, that's awesome. I do want to say, Mikey, like at the how Kagetsu went out is like, I think she did her own show or her last match in Stardom. She did a gauntlet match where she faced every single wrestler in the company.
Wild.
Yes, it is. And when I say the gauntlet match, how Stardom does the gauntlet matches is like either it's like a 1 minute time limit, and if even if Kagetsu gets pinned, she still has the next person coming out.
That's insane.
Yeah, so it's like a great sort of like, oh man, this is great.
Yeah, that sounds awesome, and I would love to see that match as well. I was going to say something, but I forgot what it was. So I'm just going to give you my meatball rating on this match, which was a 4.5 meatball match. No worries. 4.5 meatball match. This match was awesome. I recommend you watch it. I need to get into more Joshi stuff because Joshi stuff is awesome, and I knew Ryan was going to suggest me Joshi matches. I knew it was going to happen. I knew at least one of these matches was going to be a Joshi match because Ryan loves Joshi wrestling.
I really wanted to get when I suggested matches to you, I really wanted to get like a huge sphere of wrestling.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Which everyone, you definitely did.
I really wanted to get that huge like scope of like, this is what the world of independent wrestling has to offer.
For me, I tried to recommend you matches that I found interesting because I know that me and you have very different preferences on what kind of matches we like. So I wanted to give you matches that you – some matches that you may not have looked at before or some matches that you probably wouldn't be interested in at like usually. And then I also gave you some matches in there that I knew you would definitely be interested in. Because you can have a little as a treat.
Thank you. I think that's a great. I think that's a great transition for me to get into this next match.
Which absolutely.
Jimmy Lloyd versus Joey Janela social distancing match at GCW.
I knew as soon as we said we were doing this Secret Santa exchange of matches, I knew for a fact immediately that I was giving you this one.
I heard about this match and I was like, this is a wild, crazy match. I saw some gifs of it online and I did not realize, I'm glad you sent it my way because I did not realize it was on YouTube for free.
Oh yeah.
Like I thought it was just like, oh, you're gonna watch it. And I was like, oh no, it's free. Oh, then I'm definitely watching it now. I thought it was a good match. What did I write? I said it was hygienically clean, dumb fun.
What's the opposite of Outlaw Mud Show?
I was like, this match took advantage of a very weird time, obviously, to apply to a match. It was very GCW, where it's sort of like taking the shit out of what's happening in the world right now and just being like, you know what, fuck it, we'll do a match that has social distancing rules. And if you are under a rock or some reason, obviously that means is like they had to wrestle 6 feet apart. Which was enforced very heavily by the referee by taking out, I think, a ruler or something at some point.
A That's funny.
You know, some solid funny spots like the Canadian Destroyer and Lloyd putting himself through a door practically.
Mm-hmm.
It was a previous match, like the Invisible Man, Invisible Stand match, where it's like it's all in.
Do you mean Bryce Remsburg being a fucking star for 15 minutes?
Exactly. But it's like that match where it's like you watch the match and you have to immediately buy the conceit to be able to watch the match, in my opinion.
That's part of the reason I love wrestling, because you could do stupid shit like this and like it's just fun. It's just fun and it's funny and like you suspend your disbelief a little bit and then it's like that amount of bizarre wackiness.
Mm-hmm.
Mixed with like it really shows off like some of the athleticism of these guys, like some of the moves, like that Canadian Destroyer, the way they timed it. And the way they both hit the move,
it's great.
Basically perfectly without touching each other, was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, I think it. They're wrestling, like, it's one of those things where it's like you see the match card and you're like, oh, social distancing match. And in your head, you're like, I know what social distancing is. Okay, I'm already in. you know what I mean? And I think that is maybe where, you know, going back to our other reviews, I think that's sort of like where, like the Boneyard matches and like Firefly Funhouse matches are sort of like in rougher territories, because it's like I have no idea what a Boneyard match is. I have no idea what a Firefly Funhouse, so I have to figure out the conceit of the match as it's happening. Mm. Where here it's like social distancing. I know what social distancing is. I'm excited to see what this is. I already know the conceit, how this might gonna happen. Or you see on the card Invisible Man versus Invisible Stan, you're like, okay, we have two invisible wrestlers.
We're going to watch two people we can't see have a wrestling match. Let's do
it. It's up front tells you what is happening. You're like, okay, if I'm into this, I'm watching it, because why would this is insane. But I thought it was a great match. I liked that the heel tactic of this match was to not wipe down the chair with disinfectant wipes. you know, like I said, I wrote this down, and I think this is my best, like, hygienically clean, dumb fun. I think this is my best critical analysis of this match. It is not a match of the year contender, but a year-defining match.
I know how you feel. I get what you mean.
It really sums up 2020 so far. Mm-hmm. It's not gonna be at the end of the year, but honestly, for like matches of the year listings, this kind of should be up there, because this basically sums up what this year was already. But you know, I thought it was a good match. I gave it 3 meatballs. I thought it was really fun. You know, like I said, it's not a match of the year contender, but it's, you know, it was very good.
Yeah. It seems awesome, and I can't wait to watch the full thing.
Oh, and I think I said it. Joey Janela picks the win. Does it matter who we keep saying? We keep both forgetting that who won the match. Does it really matter? Unless I guess it's important. I don't know.
I guess we both know, but I feel like for the fans it might be important.
Maybe it's spoilers. Maybe it'd be spoilers to give away who the winner is.
That's what I was worried about, but also I feel like to give an honest review of the match, I want to see who the winner is. I want people to know who the winner is, just to... I don't know.
That's true.
I guess if you don't want to know the winner, fast forward.
Fast forward like a quick 15 seconds.
Yeah. All right. So my next match is less fun and definitely way more serious. I have Allison Kay versus Thunder Rosa at NWA Hard Times for the NWA Women's title. This match, I literally just finished watching maybe 20 minutes ago. and it was great.
Which Google did. I had the link to the match, so I was trying to give it to Mikey, and I was like, man, Google does not want me to give you my login.
No, Google is not a fan of me logging in New Jersey.
Yeah, they were very upset about this. Google's like, what? No, this, how are they still getting all through our... or verification method.
So this match was awesome. I really like both of these two, and I did want to see more Thunder Rosa matches, so I'm glad you sent this to me. Mm-hmm. Because the last Thunder Rosa match I watched was a little disappointing. And I knew from tweets and from clips and from whatever sources that I know she could be very good. So I was very excited to see a very good Thunder Rosa match, and this absolutely delivered. They started off immediately fighting. Like, the bell rang and Kay was in there beating the crap out of Thunder Rosa. Like, these two immediately started beating the crap out of each other. There was no bullshit, no fucking around. these two wanted to fight each other, and it was awesome to watch. They absolutely both turned on the aggression 100%. You could tell that there was no love lost between these two. And you could tell that they really respect each other because of the fact that they are throwing the books at each other. They're hitting each other with a kitchen sink and more, and just kicking the crap out of each other. And I really like this match. Thunder Rosa was basically unstoppable. Like, it was nuts. She kicked out of things left and right, and Allison Kay just could not put her down, which led to the Thunder Rosa victory in the end and becoming the new NWA Women's Champion. I gave this match 4.75 meatballs out of 5, I believe. Let me look. Yes, 4.75 meatballs out of 5. This match was awesome.
Yeah, I the moment I saw this match live when I was watching Hard Times, which very upset. NWA is in Atlanta. I'm trying to go every time, obviously, but well, you know, it's just money or time or whatever. Well, obviously, other circumstances now. I'm really trying to get an NWA, and I missed out on this pay-per-view because also they sell like hotcakes, so it's like, oh geez. But yeah, this was a. I saw this match and it was immediately like. Potentially, obviously, it was like this match. I think this pay-per-view took place in January or February or something. Mm-hmm. It was like immediately, it was like, oh, this is already a match of the year contender, and this is already potentially the best women's match of the year. Yeah. Obviously, we've had a lot of other good ones like Knox and Kai Street Fight or Ripley Flair at WrestleMania, but I was like, this was already like, this was a great match. And what I love the most about it is that the crowd was 1,000% into this match.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd was just like it was a star making moment. It felt like it was so good. I really liked this match, and I was like, yeah, I gotta show this to Mikey. I was like, this was so good.
Yeah, this match was great. I'm very glad you suggested this to me because I definitely wouldn't have had a way to watch this match otherwise. So I'm glad I got to, and I'm glad I got to see these two really put everything on the line and beat the absolute crap out of each other.
Yeah. Next up for me, it was Tyler Black versus Kevin Steen.
This is one of those matches where I was like, I know Ryan will like this one.
This is a Ring of Honor Salvation in 2010. I also am convinced, Mikey, that you saw the thumbnail for this match and was like, yup.
Oh, I saw these two in a match, and I was like, right after their WrestleMania match, perfect.
Yeah, I was like, this is perfect. It just came out of Ring of Honor. Like I said, the backlog of stuff. Mm-hmm. This was a bloody war, and you can obviously tell by the thumbnail where it's like they both have bloody faces. You know, Steen at one point throws Tyler Black off the top rope into the guardrail, which busts Black's like clean open.
Yikes.
And then later, Black does a double stomp through a table to Owens, which somehow busts him open. I don't know. Owens went through the table on his back, and he came up with a bloody face. And I was like, Owens, how'd you cut yourself, bud?
A splinter. When he went through the table, a splinter went up and just like sliced his foot for it.
It was nasty. Black ends up winning using Kevin Steen's finisher move. Actually, Black ended up winning with using the sharpshooter.
Ooh,
and it was a very reminiscent image of, and I imagine this is what they were going for, of the Bret Hart Steve Austin image, where it's, you know, the sharpshooter on Steve Austin with Steve Austin like
mask, yeah.
The crimson mask. Yeah, obviously it wasn't like a double turn like that match was, but it was still a great match. Lots of high impact moves that really showcased the pure talent of both these guys. And you could easily see watching this that they were on the path to be great stars in WWE down the line.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, oh yeah, these guys, they're tailor-made for WWE once they, you know, get more experience under their belt and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it was a very simple story that was told great. It was such a great match. Like, I watched it, I was like, you gotta watch it. I give it 4.25 meatballs.
Yeah.
I thought it was, did I say it was the best match I watched? Yeah, I said it was the best match I watched that you gave me. It was so good. Like, mm-hmm. It was such a good match. As a fan of Kevin Steen, I highly recommend this match to you because it was so good. But, there's nothing more I can say. It was just like, it was nothing flashy about it. It was just a great story. That's all it really was. And it was, you know, I loved it. I love this match.
I knew you would. That's why I had to send it your way because I knew you would like it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So my next match is from OTT, and we have Timothy Thatcher versus Minoru Suzuki at 4th year anniversary. This match was so very much Ryan Knightsy.
Yeah, maybe.
It was a fucking grapple fest, mat war, submission hold transition. These two, it was technical wrestling central, and I know Ryan eats that shit up. Like, he loves it.
I just love Timothy Thatcher. I love Minoru Suzuki. The moment I saw them wrestling with each other, I was like, "Welp, yeah. I'm watching that match."
This match was awesome. The way Suzuki was being a complete dickhead the whole time. The best is when they were on the outside at one point, and there was a spot where Suzuki was distracting, quote unquote, the ref, where he was just like, "Look over there," and the ref turned around and he threw a chair at Timothy Thatcher. That was great. But yeah, other than like some outside spots, this was a mat fight through and through. These two were just trying to put each other into mission holds basically the whole time, and then when they weren't, they were punching the shit out of each other. It almost felt like an MMA match in that sense, where they were just beating the crap out of each other and trying to get each other to tap out. And it was awesome. This match did end with Minoru Suzuki winning because, like I said, he was beating the crap out of Timothy Thatcher. And he won with his signature pile driver, which was great.
The Gotch style pile driver.
Yes.
So good.
I gave this match another 4.75 meatball match. This one ruled.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, next up, you gave me Gay Tanic Panic. That's right. Danhausen and Effie.
I saw Gay Tanic Panic, and I couldn't. How could I resist that name to give you?
Danhausen and Effie versus Pazuzu, the team of Chris Dickinson and Pinky Sanchez from Beyond Wrestling. This match was on Halloween, or at least the Halloween day or two. So it was like a kind of Halloween dress-up match.
Oh,
the referee
you
was actually
wild Halloween dress-up match. You have to watch. Hold on, it's. Blah, blah, blah. I reviewed it.
Well, as you look that up, I'll continue my review. Effie dressed up like Danhausen. Pinky Sanchez dressed up as Jesus. The referee actually dressed up like Chris Dickinson, which I thought was funny.
That's great.
I think Chris Dickinson and Danhausen just didn't dress up. It was a Halloween episode. It started off with everyone's favorite Danhausen against Jesus Sanchez, which I thought was the fun little like demon versus Jesus moment. And then we turned into a daddy off with Effie and Chris Dickinson.
That sounds fair.
Yeah, it was just really good. There was a moment where Danhausen goes for his tequila shot gimmick thing where he's like on the ring ropes and he starts singing the da ba da 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 ba ba, and
that,
then he super kicks a guy and says tequila.
That threw me off so much the first time I didn't know that was like a thing he did. So when I was just watching, it was Danhausen did it, and I was watching this match that I'm trying to desperately look for so I could see who the other two competitors were because I don't remember. But when I first saw him do that, it threw me off completely. Because I wasn't ready for just tequila to start playing out of nowhere, and it was.
Are you talking Trip Cassidy, Atticus Cogar, Cogar? Yes.
Yeah, that's the one. In that match, it was another Halloween match, and Danhausen came out as Stone Cold Danhausen.
Oh my god!
And he did the beer spot, but instead he had like jars full of teeth.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was wild. Continue.
So that tequila song bit was silent the entire time in my stream. I wasn't sure if my computer was just fucking up or if Beyond like cut the audio, because YouTube
probably
flagged them or whatever.
Probably that.
I don't know. Does tequila the song actually play over the speakers, or is it just the crowd singing?
No, it actually plays over the speakers. In the triple threat match, they actually did mute the audio, and in the triple threat match, it actually just started randomly playing over the speakers, and I was like. I was absolutely like, what the fuck is going on? it was great.
There's at one point during this match where Effie goes for a dive onto Chris Dickinson, and Chris Dickinson just completely misses catching him.
Yikes.
Just 100% misses him. Pazuzu ends up winning the match with Sanchez Jesus doing a moonsault onto Effie. Mikey, this match was fine. I wasn't a huge fan of this match. There was no crazy spots or crazy anything for me, really. Nothing nothing really clicked, and I was really struggling to try to figure out what it was that, like, wasn't clicking, because, you know, I'm watching this, and it's like, oh, Danhausen and Effie, they're huge, you know, the Twitter famous, practically, and, you know, Chris Dickinson, Sanchez. I like watching Chris Dickinson, and I've never seen Pinky Sanchez, but obviously the crowd was into, you know, parts of this match, so I was like, what's not clicking? And I was like, first off, maybe it's the fact that this is a Halloween show, and, you know, like, you know, people are dressed up and stuff, so maybe it's like, it's one of those you have to be in the moments, right? Mm-hmm. You know, had to have, you know, maybe there'll be more appeal because you had to be there.
Did you try dressing up like it was Halloween?
I did not. And maybe that's what hurt it ultimately. That might have been on me.
You should have gotten in costume.
But as I was watching this match, I did notice something, which was that the crowd was more behind the team of Pazuzu, Chris Dickinson, and Sanchez than Danhausen and Effie. Which legit surprised me. I was like the crowd, because whenever they would always like they you know start chanting for Pazuzu or whatever, but then like whenever Danhausen and Effie started to sort of get the upper hand, the crowd started to get quiet, and I was like, oh, interesting.
Hard turn.
I don't think it's the crowd. And I was trying to think about that, and I was like, I don't know if it's the crowd not liking them wrestling. But to be fair, Danhausen's wrestling is, like, very limited, it appears, because he did, like, a couple drop kicks and, like, kind of botched a couple things. I was like, I don't know what happened in here. But I was like, I wonder if it's, like, you would think that Danhausen and Effie, who were all over Twitter, that there'd be bigger stars.
Yeah.
When the crowd just went quieter than their wrestling. And then I had a guess. I was like, maybe that sort of sums up them or, you know, other wrestlers or whatever that, like, on Twitter, they're amazing and they're great, and I love watching Danhausen on Twitter because his videos are hilarious. Mm-hmm. But then it's like he's a fun gimmick to have on Twitter. But then you get to a match, and it's like, you know, he was probably the fourth worst wrestler in a 4-man match. Mm-hmm. If that makes sense. Maybe I'm being a bit harsh on Danhausen Effie, and maybe it's just the one match, and maybe I need to see more stuff of him. But it was just like, this match was fine, and it was like, it feels like he must have been there. I wouldn't recommend it right away. I would have to watch other Danhausen stuff, but it's like, it really, I was like thinking about it, I was like, why isn't this working for me? And apparently, why isn't this working for the crowd? I was confused by it. Because at the beginning of the match, Danhausen and Effie were like, people were cheering for them and stuff. But then by the end of it, it's like everyone was just sort of caring about Chris Dickinson and Sanchez. Mm-hmm. And no one was playing heel, really. I mean, and then they all popped when Danhausen brought out his teeth. But I was like, what is... I was so confused.
Yeah,
I was really confused
by that.
I
feel like me and you both experienced Danhausen very quick. Like, if you watch a Danhausen match, it's very quick that you get his character. And, like, there's a lot of confusing things that happen. One, the tequila mm-hmm. spot threw me off. Two, the teeth threw me off.
But it's like, it's very confusing. It's just like the tequila bit. It's like, this is such like a meme sort of like Twitter bit that it's just like, that was fun. But like, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It felt different. I don't know. Something wasn't clicking, and I'm very confused. And I was very like, and that's what I got out of this match, was just like, why aren't they working in like a live wrestling environment? But I didn't really like this match too much. I gave it 1.75 meatballs. I was very low on it. It was just sort of like, oh, man, I don't... Like, it just never clicked, and, like, the crowd wasn't into it, so I was like, something's about this. It's like, I'm not sure. Maybe I'm losing it. Maybe I'm being too harsh, but I don't know. I was very confused by what I was watching, I guess.
Yeah. All right. So for my next match, we are going to jump into one of the... Probably, if not the most absolutely insane... 6-man tag team matches I've ever seen in my entire life. We have the team of Doofixer versus Blood Generation from Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate at Supercard of at the first ever Supercard of Honor.
I wrote Dragon Gate in parentheses because this is like a Dragon Gate 6-man match that they had at Supercard of Honor.
Yeah, so it was at Ring of Honor.
Really, it's Dragon Gate.
Yeah. This match was insane. This match was absolutely insane. These two... every time I thought it was over, it went on for another 15 minutes. Like, it felt like, this match felt like it went on for 2 hours. It was so, so good. And the pacing was insane. It never gave you a second to breathe. Every time you thought stuff was going to slow down, something buck wild just off the wall happens and everything speeds up again. And all of a sudden everyone's in the ring throwing the most bonkers moves I've ever seen at each other. It was great. This was the match where I knew probably halfway through that I was like, it's going to be five meatballs, like, easy, because I was popping. I was like, what? How is this not over yet? Like every there were so many spots that could have been the finish, but weren't, and I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready for the insanity that was this match. I honestly, when the chance of Fight Forever came to my mind, because I literally thought that was what was going to happen. I thought this match was going to last an eternity, because
it's like they don't have any finishers. All their finishers are locked, so they're just going to keep wrestling.
Yeah, like it felt like that. It felt like a match in 2K where you had the finishers set to like slow, so you just have to keep beating the fuck out of each other for like 45 minutes. Before you could do literally anything to finish the match. It was awesome. This match wildly does end, though.
Unexpectedly.
Unexpectedly, it came to an end. And Doofixer ended up winning. Ryan, this was, like I said, this was probably the most insane, tag team match I've ever seen, period. Six-man or otherwise. Like, I remember watching this match, and then before going on to the next one to keep going, I'd take like 10-15 minutes just to cool down, because it was just insane. I watched this match, and then I walked out of my room, went upstairs, and just paced back and forth, and I was just breathing, because I was just like, I don't know if it was the adrenaline, because that match got me so hype, or if it was I just drank too much coffee. But either way, this match blew my mind.
yeah, this match was insane to watch.
I gave this one the 6 meatballs. We got the extra one tacked on. We're going over 5 today. This is the best match I watched out of the ones you sent me, and it absolutely blew me away.
Yeah, no, this was I heard about this match. I have not seen it, but I'm 100% was planning to watch it.
Oh my god, Ryan, you have to. People said, have to watch it as soon as you can. This match is absolutely, it's mind-boggling how insane it is.
I've been told that this match was a must-watch, and I was like, well, I'm going to have Mikey watch it. This was apparently, as if I remember the history at all correctly, this was one of the first, like, Dragon Gate style 6-man matches that took place at like WrestleMania weekend, because obviously Supercard of Honor and whatnot. Yep. That like this was the biggest thing that many people were looking forward to, like every weekend for WrestleMania for a long time. Obviously that changed when Dragon Gate and Shima and all that stuff sold out, but it was like this became the mold. And then you have later 6-man matches that are like, you got Ricochet and Johnny Gargano in them, and it's just like these type of 6-man matches happening. It's just like, oh my god, they're killer.
Also, fun fact, in this match, the rules are that tags aren't necessary.
Really?
Yes. One of the things they hype up in the beginning is that they don't, to get in the match, they don't need to tag each other. They can, and sometimes they do, but they don't have to. Which is
really?
Very,
that's
which
great.
Makes for some very interesting chaos.
That's great. Honestly, I love that.
It's kind of buck wild.
That's awesome. Okay, then I'll move on to my next match, which was Kimberly taking on AR Fox in Beyond Wrestling.
So I actually have a reason behind this match. The reason behind this match is because I know you've been talking a lot about AR Fox, and I know you like AR Fox. And I have been watching a lot of Kimberly. And I really like Kimberly. So I thought this was a good mixture of you and me in this match.
This felt like a very... I did not look up. I forgot to... I'm planning on doing it, but I did not look up when the when this match took place. It looked like it was very early, like several years ago, so I don't exactly know. I can look it up later, but this match was... It was a weird... Have you seen this match yet? No. It was a great thumbnail, because the thumbnail is just Kimberly hitting A.R. Fox in the head of a steel chair.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, there we go. It was a very weird, good match that I surprisingly liked a lot. Mm. You know, it took place in this very dinky arena, but the match kicks off with some back and forth for a minute or two. It was literally like, it starts off, they do a couple stuff, and then AR Fox runs out of the arena, runs out of the ring, grabs a chair, then when the ref is like distracted, he comes up and kicks the referee in the back of the head, hits Kimberly with the chair, pins her, wins the match. That's the match. And I liked it because it was just like, what the, oh, it just, it was like, the match was like 3 minutes. It was just like, AR Fox was like wrestling Kimberly. And was like, nah, fuck this. Grab a shield chair, hit her. And it was just that energy of like, I'm not wrestling you. Hits the referee in the back, hits her with a steel chair, gets the referee over, pins her 1, 2, 3, done. But of course the Beyond Faithful, did not have a lot of it. They then restarted the match.
Okay.
Then the match continues as like a solid wrestling match. You know, it's with Fox as the dominant heel over Kimberly as the babyface underdog. Eventually, Kimberly has enough of AR Fox and hits him in the head with a chair, which the referee sees and results in the disqualification.
Bummer.
The crowd then chants, "This is bullshit."
Yikes.
It was a solid and surprising match that definitely like woke me up. Like if you were watching a bunch of wrestling matches and then you got to this one and you saw the AR Fox running out like a minute into the match, grab a steel chair and wins it, it's like, what the? You like immediately wake up because you're like, this is great. What is happening? It was, you know, the finish, the overall finish of like restarting and then Kimberly still loses to a chair shot DQ. That was kind of BS. Because I was kind of thinking about it. I was like, it doesn't really get heat on Fox at all. It sort of gets heat on the promotion because the referee is the bad guy now. And also, like, people are chanting, like, restart the match again. Which I agree with. I think if they restarted the
match.
Because if you restarted the match again and basically made it a 2 out of 3 falls match, then you have Kimberly win and she looks like an amazing star. I was like, I don't know why they didn't do that.
If you want to see a match where Kimberly looks like an amazing star, if you are interested in more matches, I recommend Kimberly versus Drew Gulak.
Oh, yeah, it's on my list.
Oh, my God, dude, that match is amazing. That match is so good. And it puts Kimberly over, like, Gulak puts Kimberly over like a motherfucker.
I believe Gulak trained Kimberly.
Yes,
I'm not 100%
on
that. Also on, there was who I believe, and I was looking at the screen intently. I was listening to his voice. I believe Oney Lorcan was on commentary for this match, which was very weird. And also disappointing because I think the commentary sucked.
Oh no.
I was like, this commentary is bad.
I love when I'm watching an indie wrestling match and you just hear like some random wrestler that you know just on commentary. It's like, wait, what? Like I was watching a match a couple weeks ago, and I think Christopher Daniels was just randomly on commentary, and I was like, what the hell? I was watching the Adam Cole Bobby Fish match, and Christopher Daniels was on commentary.
Yeah. I gave this match 2 3/4 meatballs. If they did like that third restart, or I guess the second restart and had the third match, it probably would have exceeded 3 meatballs for me. And especially if Kimberly wins. I was just like, it was so good. It like woke me up. Like I was like watching all these matches in a row and I was like, okay, hold on. Okay. And the Kimberly AR Fox was just like, oh my God, what is it? What? The match is over? Just like that. You hit her over a steel chair and that's it. Yeah, I thought it was good.
Awesome. My next match is probably one of, on my list, it's the most recent match, out of my matches. And it's Will Ospreay versus B Priestley. From WrestleTalk Screw Coronavirus event. I did watch this match, not live, but right after the event happened, because I was at work when it was happening live. So when I came home, I immediately put it on.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it again for the review. This match was just as awesome the second time around. These two absolutely kicked the snot out of each other. Ospreay was also being such a huge dickhead this whole match, and that made it great. Yeah. Because B. Priestley was not having any of his shit any of this match. And I thought that was wonderful. Whenever he tried to be an asshole, B was like, nah, nah, nah. We're not doing this right now. And she kicked the crap out of him.
I've learned that, like, when you're watching intergender matches, the big real key to intergender matches is to have the male as the heel.
Yes.
Like, you really, you can't both be faces, and obviously the male can't be the face. But it's like, I have never seen, I don't think I've ever seen a intergender match where the female was the heel and the male was the face. But they definitely work, I think, emotionally better for people when the male is the heel and just beating down the lady.
So there is a little bit of an issue I have with, not the heel-face dynamic, but just in intergender matches in general, of the woman being the underdog. Just because she's a woman, I don't think that's cool. Like, in this match, it's not so prevalent because it's fucking Will Ospreay, one of the greatest wrestlers in the world. Like, no matter what gender, so like, I kind of get it more here. But like, there's the stupid spots where like, whoever it may be, where the woman tries to shoulder block the dude and he just no sells it. It's like, come on, do we need to do that? Like, do we need to do that shit? Like, come on, can't we just have, like, a normal-ass wrestling match where a shoulder block fucking works? Like, it's not... Like,
exactly.
It's just so annoying when, like, I hate the stupid stuff like that.
Do you feel like that happened in this match?
There was a point where exactly this happened, where B. Priestley was trying to hit shoulder blocks on Will Ospreay, and he just no-sold it. And then he hits her with one, and she freaking, like, does... She gets turned inside out. And it's like, come on, really? Like, it's B. Priestley and Will Ospreay. Two of the greatest wrestlers, period, I have ever seen.
Will Ospreay, many people would say, was the wrestler of the year last year.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like, we don't need that. Like, Will Ospreay was being just a perfectly good heel on his own, being a dick to B. Priestley, just messing with her because they're dating. Like, the heel aspect was perfectly fine. We don't need him no-selling B's moves as well. I don't know. I thought that was dumb, but, like, otherwise, this match was great.
Yeah, I feel like for me, this match was sort of like, if you're gonna do that and have like Will Ospreay the male like no sell a little bit, I feel like the female should still get the win.
Yeah,
so it's like, oh, that's what you get for no selling and whatnot.
And then
but I also like, yeah, I do also like the idea that like Will Ospreay was just being an ass to her just because they were dating, and he's just like, oh, I'm not no selling you because you're female. I'm no selling you because you're my girlfriend. Because
you're my girlfriend, and it's funny.
Yeah, and he's like, I'm gonna chop you as hard as possible because you're my girlfriend and I love you. And that's just what he did. I feel like the story that they were trying to tell was the idea of like, you're my girlfriend, I'm not gonna take it easy on you just because I love you. So I'm going to actually double down on the difficulty it's going to
be
for you.
That is a thing I did like about this match. Just that instead of him taking it easy on her, he, like, because he loves her and, like, because they're dating, instead of taking it easy on her, he doubled down and went even harder.
He's just like, nah, fuck you,
exactly.
Though.
I think that's what made this match awesome for me, is that they both went hard as fuck on each other and didn't pull punches at all. And that's what made it great for me, because they did all this, and they did all these insane moves for no fans in the arena. They didn't have to go that hard, but they went that hard for us. Like, it was great. And I do like the post-match where they kind of do, where Ospreay's just, like, holding me, and he's like, you did good. And it was nice. It was a good match. I really liked it. They absolutely beat the crap out of each other, which, like I said, they didn't need to go that hard, but they did, and I appreciate that they did, because this match turned out to be awesome. This match easily could have been... I think this match easily could have been bad if they did take it easy on each other and did go that route, but because they didn't, it was good. It ended up being, in my book, a classic.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, let's keep, I guess, the...
I was just about to... This match got 4.5 meatballs out of me. This match was great.
Well, then I'll keep the intergender train rolling and go into Ethan Page, Jordan Grace, Black Label Pro. Falls Count Anywhere for the Black Label Pro Championship.
So I gave you this match because I watched Ethan Page versus Jordan Grace, the match that led up to this Falls Count Anywhere match, when Jordan Grace beat Ethan Page via countout after hitting with 3 suicide dives. And Jordan Grace ended up winning the match via countout, which led to this match of the Falls Count Anywhere.
I think knowing that makes me like this match. Makes me like this match less.
Interesting.
And I'll explain why. Okay. This match was, I think it was a solid Falls Count Anywhere match. Of course, you know, it started out with this huge walk and brawl, which obviously I'm not like a huge fan of walk and brawls, but it ended up having the second half of it being very like nasty bumps into like these wooden boards that they said were doors. They 100% weren't doors. They were way too thin for to be doors. Ethan Page ends up getting this match. So there's not much to say for me about this match. I thought the match was fine. I gave it 2.5 because I was just sort of like, you know, it was a fine match. You know, it had the walk and haul. The first half was like, I'm not a huge fan of this. The walk and brawl didn't do like anything exciting.
The walk and brawl never does anything exciting.
Yeah, whereas like the Mayu Iwatani Kagetsu and also the Janela Gage that I'll get to, they do like the high spots and stuff. Right? The Kagetsu Itani was the double stomp
off
the thing.
They got into the stands, they did the double stomp, yeah.
Where it's like, if you don't do something like that, then it's just like, you're just throwing each other into the walls and whatnot. And it's like, then it's kind of boring. But then the second half I thought was fun, so I gave it 2.5. But to go on, to keep going on into the men versus women, not men versus women, but intergender, I guess, match discussion that we were having, is that after the match is where I got the real issues. So after the match, Ethan Page cut a face sort of company guy promo, which was weird because he was 100% the heel in this match, but whatever. And then he then put over Jordan Grace as the outstanding woman athlete that she is. He said that he was lucky in this win, where last time they faced was like, Jordan definitely got the win over me, and that's on her. But like now knowing that was a countout victory.
Yeah, I didn't
like not a pin.
That match, it was good up until that point, and it was like, I was like, oh, really? A count out is how you're gonna do this?
But it's like, oh, he's like, yeah, Jordan beat me before, and I was like, but you now knowing it was a count out that beat you, it's like, well, then you weren't really. I mean, it wasn't like a pin. Like a pin is definitive. He was protected in that count out victory to a certain extent.
I don't think he was protected. I think it was to lead up to this match. I think it was to set up for the Falls.
That's true. So then he goes in and talks about how he's like, you know, he got lucky in this match. And this is the point, I was slightly weirded out by this because without going into much detail and to avoid putting my foot into my mouth too much, I felt like it's one of those things that as a booker, it's one of those show don't tell moments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't tell me that she's a great athlete. Just show me that she is.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, getting a pinfall over Ethan Page to win the championship would be great, but then doing like a count out victory and then just getting pinned and then that's it. Like yeah. at this promo thing, he brings out like all of his guy friends and buddies and stuff afterwards. And it's just like, and he's like, yeah, Jordan Grace, I got lucky. And it's like, and Jordan Grace isn't there. Like he's just telling the audience that Jordan Grace is great. I was like, she's not even there to like get the praise or anything.
Interesting.
I don't know. I just, all in all, it was a good match, worth the view, but you know, it when you're free, no rush, really. But yeah, it was just that sort of conversation where it's just like, show don't tell me. Show me that these are great women athletes, and don't just tell me that they're great women athletes, especially by yourself and with a live mic, and don't have the other person there standing with you.
Yeah. I probably will watch this match because I did watch the setup to this match, so I probably will end up watching this one just to see the blow off, but yeah, I'll take my time, I guess.
Yeah, it's not like, don't rush to see it. It's not like the Dofix or Blood Generation, like, rush to see it.
You have to rush to see that. Like, as soon as we're done with this call, go watch that match.
That's fair.
All right, so my next match was from Evolve, and it was Austin Theory versus Darby Allin from Evolve 121. This match ruled. This match was good. Yeah. I love Darby Allin. I have never seen Austin Theory up until now. So that was cool. Definitely a cool introduction to Austin Theory.
Which to say, you said in a WrestleMania preview that you've never seen an Austin Theory match. And then when you told me about this, I was like, well, I'm giving him this match. I'm giving him Theory Darby.
Because we were going to see an Austin Theory match if WrestleMania week happened.
That's true.
On a card? I thought he was.
I don't remember. I would have to check. Maybe. I don't know.
This match was awesome. These two it was offense. It was Darby, then it was Theory, then it was Darby, then it was Theory, and these two were just beating each other up. It was a fight. It wasn't a match, it was a fight. Like, these two were fighting.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure Darby Allin is, like, indestructible as a human being. Like, I feel like his bones are just, like, I feel like someone went, like, Darby broke a bone one time, and then the doctors, like, secretly replaced all of his bones with steel. Like,
yeah, I don't know what it is, but this guy is just so good.
He does wild shit, and it feels like, wow, he should have broken every fucking bone in his body with that one, and he just gets up and keeps going on the match. It's wild. It is wild how much punishment Darby Allin can take. It's insane. I guess that's why he's relentless, right? but in the end, Theory does win. Theory gets a one count on Darby, which was awesome. I think even though Darby lost this match, he came out a star. He looked great. Darby put on an amazing show, and so did Austin Theory. They both came out looking amazing.
I do want to say, because we may be remiss in saying it, this match was for the Evolve title.
Yes, it was for Austin Theory's Evolve title. I almost forgot about that. Which Austin Theory does retain when he beats Darby. And like I said, this match made them both look like stars. They both came out of this match better, I think. And I really found a bigger respect for both of them. I gave this one 4 meatballs out of 5. It was great.
Yeah, this was a great match. I knew I wanted to show this to you. Moving on, Orange Cassidy, Kylie Rae, Beyond Wrestling. You gave me this match,
I gave
Mikey.
You this one because it's so... It's so Mikey.
This is the epitome
Mikey
of Mike.
Match on this card. Like, there's nothing more me than Kylie Rae versus Orange Cassidy.
I have seen this match before. I haven't seen this match in maybe like a year or two. Like, I'm trying to remember. I haven't seen this match in forever.
I originally wasn't going to give you this match because I absolutely was like, oh, I had to have reviewed this one already. I had to have done this for Mikey's Indy 500 already. And then I looked through and I didn't. And I was like, What?
Well, I think it was
he's
like,
getting it. Like,
it was the same thing where it was like, as we started like doing the shows and stuff, it was like, oh, we watched this match years ago. We just haven't like reviewed it, I guess. This match is great. It was great. Obviously, after Cassidy suggested it, I guess, it was for the internet title.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really good match. It started, of course, with some comedy in the beginning, but then as the match went on, it got more and more competitive. While keeping its fun levels up, like, and still maintaining the idea, like, we're going to have fun sometimes, but we're going to get competitive.
Those are my favorite Orange Cassidy matches, where there's still, where he can go hard as hell, but there's also still funny bits in between.
It's not full comedy, and it's not full serious, because Orange Cassidy can almost never be full serious. Like,
it's that nice mix.
Even the David Starr match starts as a little bit of the comedy stuff.
Oh, yeah, like that introduction was incredible.
Yeah. Kylie Rae, and she's an amazing talent. You know, while you and I are very disappointed that she did not stay with AEW for whatever reasons.
I still have my Kylie Rae AEW shirt.
That's true. I think moving to Impact full time was an amazing move for her. Seeing that the women's division there is also amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, she can still take indie bookings and she can compete in intergender wrestling at Impact on TV. So I was like, you know, that makes 100% sense for her. Where did I miss that thing? While watching this match, it's in others, she's obviously good at intergender wrestling, so it's, you know, go for it. She's just good. Orange Cassidy, and this is a weird... stay with me here, Mikey. Orange Cassidy is someone I'll compare to an early Undertaker.
Interesting. Explain.
You know, remember when Undertaker originally came out back in, what was it, Survivor Series, back in the day? You know, he comes out. He's, you know, they're both sort of slowly moving around the ring. Don't know what they're really going to do. And, you know, they're just sort of like doing their bit, their gimmick. And then literally at the drop of a hat, like just like that, they both can have the ability to just turn it on and just instantly destroy, like instantly go into this thing of like, you don't expect Orange Cassidy to do anything. But when he does, it's like, oh my God, he could do all this stuff. And that was the same sort of idea with early Undertaker. It was just, he's slow moving, you know, like, oh, it's a dead guy or whatever. And then all of a sudden he keeps doing these like jumping dives at you and, you know, top rope and pile drivers and stuff. And it's like, oh my God, who is this person? I was like, they have the same sort of energy, which is very interesting that I made that connection. The match itself is great. Like I said, I've seen it before, but I highly recommend I highly recommend it to anyone who gets the chance. This is something I would say. It's neither of their best matches, but it's still a great match.
It's solid.
Yeah, it's not their best match. It did give it 3.25 meatballs. It was good. It was a really good match. Like I said, you know, they're just great talents. They're just really great talents.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I would have liked to see them both thrive in AEW, but you know.
True.
Yeah. And I'm glad where everyone ended up where they did, and everyone's happy where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So this next match, we have another match from Black Label Pro, another Jordan Grace match, interestingly, and it's Jordan Grace versus Swoggle at Dropkicks and Dragons. There is not much to say about this one, Ryan. This match was about 5 minutes long, and it consisted of Jordan Grace body slamming two fans onto Swoggle, and then Jordan Grace getting disqualified when Alley Cat interferes and kicks the shit out of Swoggle, and that's it. That's the match. There's nothing else.
That's the reason. So the reason I don't know if you remember this text message I sent you a little bit ago, but I sent you a text message out of the blue being like, I don't know what it is, but like every single time I watch a Black Label Pro match, I never like it. This was the match that made me send that text message.
That's fair.
I was like, I saw this. I was like, okay, Swoggle and Jordan Grace, whatever. And I'm watching. I was like, they're like trying to avoid taking bumps in wrestling. I was like, what the hell is this match?
Yeah. I gave this match one meatball. It wasn't good. I don't recommend it. There was nothing exciting about it. Like I said, there was no moves done. It was like Jordan Gray's body slammed two fans onto Swoggle, and that was the match. And then Alley Cat comes out and interferes, and there's nothing else to it.
I really hope for more for Black Label Pro.
DQ, I guess it's not worth your time.
I really hope for more out of Black Label Pro, because it's just and I do want to say, if I'm not mistaken, I believe Ethan Page is, if not the, or maybe one of the bookers of Black Label Pro. So I'm sort of just like, come on, man. Yeah, nothing I've seen so far. Moving on, I guess, tag match that you gave me. Tommy Dreamer and Ivelisse Velez versus Joey Ryan and Candice LeRae.
I gave you this one because it was the world's cutest tag team.
Oh yeah, of course.
I've been so into Joey Ryan and Candice LeRae lately, especially Candice LeRae.
That's fair.
They're both just awesome. I love watching. No matter, it's like the two people who I can watch forever. I guess three are World's Cutest Tag Team and Orange Cassidy, and I will always enjoy the match because
Kylie Rae
are so stupid and they're so much fun.
And Kylie Rae.
I mean, never, there's a lot of matches.
It starts growing. The list starts growing,
like,
the more you
I
think
said
about
three,
it.
3, 4, maybe 5. Yeah, it's gonna go off the rails.
This was out of the independent wrestling
Bailey,
promotion.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. This was out of the independent wrestling promotion, FWE. It was an okay match, honestly. It wasn't... I was hoping for more out of this match, but it was okay. You know, there was a lot of sloppy stuff, but the crowd was into the match, and so good on the workers. You know, it was more like comedy stuff with, you know, the Joey Ryan's blow pop trading it between Tommy Dreamer and whatnot, to try to get that comedy stuff. But really it's like, you know, it's sort of a match. And then the match basically ends with Ivelisse gets thrown to the outside and then guest commentator Maria Kanellis attacks Ivelisse to set up that feud. And then Tommy Dreamer when he's going for something on Candice LeRae, I believe. Drew McIntyre. Tommy Dreamer's going for a pile driver on Candice LeRae, and then Drew McIntyre comes at, I guess, Galloway, comes out of nowhere.
Excuse you.
Claymore's Tommy Dreamer, and then throws Joey Ryan on top of the whole mess, and they get the pinfall. So it's sort of like, oh, okay, so the match came from two interferences, I guess. So I was like, sort of like, I was like, ah, okay. Like I said, there's not much I can really say about the match. The steel line from the great Mikey Manfredi, it was fine.
It was fine.
I gave it two meatballs.
Yeah, that's fair. If you want a really good match with the world's cutest tag team, Candice LeRae versus Joey Ryan is instant classic.
Oh yeah, that's on my list.
Two matches you have to watch as soon as possible is that one, Candice LeRae versus Joey Ryan, and Do Fixer versus Blood Generation. Those are both must see matches.
And let's throw in Mike Bailey Walter while we're
And Mike Bailey Walter, because that match is also just absolutely insane, because Riptide is just amazing. So my next match is from Lucha Underground, and we have Angelico, Son of Havoc, and Ivy Lee versus the Crew, Bael, Cortez, and Mr. Cisco. This match was, to me, not as much of a match as I expected. It was mostly just the Crew beating down and beating down. I'm just gonna call them. I'm just gonna call them ASI for now, just so I don't keep saying all their names. Yeah, I'm just gonna call them ASI for now. It was mostly the Crew beating down ASI because ASI already had a couple matches that night, right? Or they had one big match before this. And they got thrown right into this at the end for the titles. And they just got the crap beat out of them at first because there was a no DQ match, so the Crew just went off on them and just beat them with in the stands. They beat them with kendo sticks and chair, and they just destroyed them. And then there was one big turnaround spot where Angelico jumps from the tippy top of the stands to the ring on top of the Crew and gets a huge crossbody, to which Matt Stryker gives the amazing, amazing, amazing line of, "Oh shit, that was dope!" Exact words.
Yes.
Exact words. And then ASI turn it around, come back, and win the trio's titles. I'm not going to lie, as much as it didn't feel like a match to me, it was still fucking awesome. Like, it was still sick. Like, I loved watching Angelico do that, because I think I replayed it 5 times. Like, he did it, I waited, then I was like, rewind 30 seconds. He did it, I waited, rewind 30 seconds. Like, I just kept replaying it. It was awesome. Because there was like this one shot where they're talking about him not being too far away to help, and he's just sitting there like looking at the ring, like thinking about like, oh, I'm really gonna do this, aren't I? Like you could see him, like you could see his brain just contemplating the spot he's about to do, and he's like, oh, all right, here we go. I guess I'm gonna jump. Like, and then he does, and it's fucking awesome. I gave this match 4.5 meatballs out of 5. It was a really feel good ending. They fought through the odds, and there was a huge, huge, flashy big spot, and I really liked it.
If I'm not mistaken, so the reason I gave you that match is simply because that is the star-making moment from Angelico, just doing that running crossbody off of it into the ring. Whereas before, I talked about the Phoenix Pentagon Drago match, where he did a crossbody off of the same structure onto the floor, which was great. But something about this was just so much crazier. And if I'm not... that was the first thing I wanted to see. And if I believe the second thing was that, like, the reason he went to go save Ivelisse, in a sense, was I believe Ivelisse hurt her ankle.
Yeah.
And that was a shoot hurt her ankle. Like, she actually, like, tore her ligaments or something.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
I thought she was just selling it really well.
No, she, like, was legit injured, I believe. And then she just, you know, was injured for a long time. If you really like this match, Mikey, I highly recommend. Basically, they do this match again, but as a ladder match. Mm-hmm. But I believe it's like a handicap ladder match where it's the three versus the two because Ivelisse is injured.
Yeah.
And Dario Cueto, the general manager, I guess, the promoter of Lucha Underground, loves that shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would highly recommend that match to you as well. Mm-hmm. Cause I think you would love that match just as much.
Oh, probably. All right. What's up next, Ryan?
Did you give me your meatball rating? Yeah.
Yes. I gave you 4.5. I gave it a 4.5 meatball.
Next up is, what was it? Joey Janela defeating Nick Gage, at the, in a Asbury Park. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Asbury,
my Jersey friend?
Asbury Park, baby.
Asbury
his
Park home, street
his
fight.
His hometown, again. In
his
quotes,
hometown.
Because I'm pretty sure he's from my hometown, but Asbury Park sounds better on the card.
And for GCW at the Skate and Surf 2015. Is Skate and Surf like that? Is that like a concert sort of like weekend?
Skate and Surf is a festival weekend that usually consists of concerts. And I'm pissed because I went to Skate and Surf, I think, in 2013 to see Streetlight Manifesto. Shout out. I went to go see Streetlight Manifesto, I think, in 2013. At Skate and Surf, and I'm pissed that I missed this.
You missed it by 2 years.
I missed it by a couple of years, and I'm mad about it. I also didn't know who Joey Janela even was at the time.
Exactly. So, exactly.
And it was in Asbury Park, so I'm sure it was great. It was in Joey Janela's hometown. I'm sure the crowd was thoroughly on his side.
Yeah, this was a fun match. Obviously, when you're at a festival like this and you are GCW, you're going to brawl around town, and that's exactly what they did. You know, so it was a brawl, walk-in brawl, but like the Kagetsu Mabu Itani match a little bit. It's weird that we're drawing similarities between some of these matches, but like that match, it's like it's a walk-in brawl, but they did like a cool spot at the beginning of it to get you hyped and keep that like hypeness throughout the rest of the walk-in brawl. So it doesn't like overstay its welcome. So getting to that point where you're jumping off the truck and doing like a weird move, whatever, I don't even know how to describe Janela's move, a splash onto Gage, that, you know, that helped immensely. It was a weird, they did like a weird sort of like, they kept saying it was like a lights out match, which was, you know, for some reason, it sort of took away the match a little bit because, you know, there were simply points where I couldn't see anything. Because like, you know, the moment they get out of the ring, there's like no light. It's just like, oh, okay. Yeah, so, you know, but at that point, once you get back to the ring, it's just, you know, lots of bumps all over the place. This was, of course, a very young Joey Janela, you know, getting a victory over a, apparently at this time, an unpinned in GCW Nick Gage. So it was like, it was Janela. It was Joey Janela sort of like cementing himself as the face of GCW, I would argue. And I argue that based solely on this one match and no other matches alone, but I would, yeah, he was the champion and he defended it against the unpinned man. So I was like, you know, that's perfect. That's what you need to do. But yeah, I believe I gave this a 2.75 meatballs. Yeah, like it was a fun match. You know, it was a fun match to watch. There was, I think, what hurt it and what lowered the rating was just the fact that I can't see some of it, which is hard. It sucks, but yeah, it's tough to knock off someone's match. That's true. It's hard to knock off someone's match because of production issues, but like, hey, it's part of the enjoyment.
Yeah. Okay. So I am going to roll on to my last match of my 10 matches, and that is Young Bucks and Ibushi versus Mysterio, Bandido, and Phoenix at All In. This match was... this was awesome. How could it not be? Like, look at these names and you tell me this match wasn't gonna be good, and you're wrong. Like, this match is just so good. I love the Bucks, I love Phoenix, I love Mysterio. Bandido and Ibushi, I haven't watched as much as the other handful, but they both did an awesome job in this match. Ibushi was great. The Golden Elite. This match was just good. There was a huge pop when Ibushi and Mysterio stepped in the ring because I think they said it was the first time ever. Which even to me, who has never watched an Ibushi match, it was awesome. Like,
mm-hmm. Ibushi has this star quality about him.
Like, I've never watched him, but I know of his status, and I know he is basically a legend at this point.
Oh, yeah. I guess so, yeah.
So, when I saw these two step in the ring, and hearing it was the first time ever these two have stepped in the ring, it definitely changed the feeling of the match for me, and it was awesome. Sorry, go ahead.
So, my question to you, Mikey, is did this match feel rushed at all?
I don't think it felt rushed because this is the pace I'm used to seeing these guys at, especially Phoenix and the Bucks. I know they're both very much throw it all on the line and just keep doing spot, 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 and just keep the match going.
And what if I told what if I wrestlers. Told you what if I told you that this match was originally supposed to have like 5 to 10 more minutes, but because of an earlier match in the card, Young Bucks and all of them were like, we only have like five minutes to do this match, and they just went out there and were just like, spot, go, just do the thing.
I didn't feel like it was rushed at all. I just thought that was just the pacing of the match, because like I said, that to me, that's not surprising. Because that's how the Bucks and that's how Phoenix and that's how these guys work. They work fast and they do spot, 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 spot. And it's
That says something about the guys.
Exactly.
Says something about those people in the match.
Exactly. For me, it didn't feel rushed and it didn't feel like it was supposed to be 10 extra minutes longer. It just felt like another match where they were just like spot, 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 spot. And I was like, yeah, that's just how it is. That's just how they do. So like, I wasn't mad that this was fast because they packed so much into it. That even though it was a little fast, it was still awesome. And I still really liked it. I gave this one... Sorry, my sheet is being weird and I forgot. I gave this one 4.75 meatballs out of 5. I love this one. I thought it was great. It was definitely a super sick match. Where in the end, the Bucks and Ibushi do pick up the victory.
Yeah, it was great. I watched that and I was like, oh, this is so good.
It was so good.
Let's go to the last match you recommended me, Mikey. It was Kenny Omega versus Bryan Danielson versus Tyler Black, triple threat match in Ring of Honor at Ring of Honor Bound to Hate in 2008.
Yeah, I saw this. I saw just the three people in this match and I was like, there was two matches in this. I was like, I'm giving Ryan a lot of Mikey matches. I'm going to throw in some Ryan matches because I know he'll love these. And it was this one, and it was Tyler Black, Kevin Steen.
This match, ironically enough, I believe I watched the day before you recommended this match to me.
Mm-hmm. Really?
I was like, I just watched it the other day, and I was just like, and then you're like, oh, watch this match. I was like, well, I already watched it. One less match for me to...
it's funny that both of our last matches are the Elite. Like,
yeah, the Elite, baby. So yeah, this match was it opened up with obviously of Ring of Honor. They have the rules of honor where you're supposed to shake hands with the competitor before the match and stuff. Easy way to figure out who the heels are. The match opens up
like this, and then they go.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, brush their hair.
Yes, I'm so glad you said what it was in this audio medium. So the match opens with Omega shaking both Bryan Danielson's hand and Tyler Black's hand, but Black and Danielson refuse to shake each other's hand.
Interesting.
Which I thought was great. In fact, at one point Tyler Black wanted Omega to help him beat up Bryan Danielson, which Omega shot down at first, but after an individual lockup with Bryan Danielson, Omega was like, nope, changed his mind. He went to go help Black, but then Black immediately turned his back on Omega and beat him down, which I thought was a great rookie moment for Kenny Omega here, like in Ring of Honor at 2008. It was like, oh, that was a great, yeah, he's the rookie guy, which you got to remember in this match, Kenny Omega is a rookie. You know, he's not the best bout machine.
I mean,
yeah,
this match was 12 years ago, like...
Yes, he was billed as like, oh, this Canadian native, you know, he's getting a big opportunity for him to compete on this big stage against these guys. And it's like, now looking back on it, it's like, this is a huge matchup that if this happened today, you would be like, what? That it'd be insane.
I'm about to say, imagine this match, but Kenny Omega versus Daniel Bryan versus Seth Rollins.
It would be insane. Yeah. It was crazy to watch. It was great work by all three men. You know, like the handshake, Omega played the bridge between Black's high-impact style and Danielson's technical experience. Danielson ended up getting the pin over over Omega. Oh, no, not the pin. Getting the win, is what I meant to write, over Omega by repeated elbows to the neck, which ended up busting open Omega's nose or something, or mouth or something, in the process. And then immediately put him into this finisher, the cattle mutilation. It was a very, very solid match. Check it out when you get the chance. No real rush, but it's definitely one of those things. It's like, you should check it out.
Yeah, I definitely will.
Yeah, it was, what did I give it? I gave it 3.25 meatballs.
Nice.
It's as good as the triple threat at the beginning of the list you gave me, Mikey. tie it all the way around.
It comes full circle, ladies and gentlemen.
Full circle. Man, we did that 100% on purpose.
Yeah. It comes full circle, almost like a lap on a racetrack. Which, to say that this lap is all wrapped up, and we have gone through yet another one on Mikey's Indy 500. Thank you, everyone, for joining me. And thank you, Ryan, for being a guest on the show and having some fun with me reviewing some matches, getting closer to that 500 mark.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, Mikey. This was a lot of fun, and I really like this sort of secret Stanta. Where, you know, that sort of thing about like you giving out matches to guests and stuff. I really like that. I really like that format a little bit. This was fun. It was fun just shooting the shit about wrestling. We, of all the booking and stuff that you and I do on Hit the Books, we don't get the chance to like just shoot the shit, talk about wrestling every once in a while. And this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was definitely awesome. So, like I said, that wraps up for another lap of Mikey's Indy 500. Thank you all again for joining me. Send in your match suggestions to @MikeyM133 on Twitter or at HitTheBooksPod on Twitter using the hashtag HTB500. Send me your independent wrestling matches for me to watch and review. And Ryan, I definitely want to have you back at some point because this was awesome. I love talking indie wrestling
with you
and shooting the shit.
I would love to come back.
I'm gonna, you know what? Since you're the special guest, I'm gonna send you the plug for our other show. Shoot it over your way.
Oh yeah, sure. Check out Hit the Books if you're listening to this podcast. You know, that's on the same podcast feed. Check out Hit the Books. You know, every Friday. You know, Mikey and I actually just starting out. Mikey and I next Friday will be, you know, last. Let me do this plug over. listen to Hit the Books every Friday. Mikey and I yesterday, I guess at the time of this recording, we released the episode of us doing the draft, which was us. We've decided to go our separate ways in the booking, and I'm booking Raw, he's booking SmackDown. So yesterday we released the episode of us drafting our own separate rosters. And next week we will be doing the first episode of those separate roster, those separate bookings, those separate drafting stuff. So I highly recommend it. I'm really excited about this new season of Hit the Books. We're obviously it's a big step for us. You know, it's a little bit, you know, more work and stuff to put in, but it's something that I am very excited about because I think the potential of things is very exciting, especially when we get to like Survivor Series and what other shows?
Yeah,
Survivor Series is the only one we're against each other. Money in the Bank, I guess.
It's
going to
be great. It's going to be
Royal
super
Rumbles
cool.
And whatnot.
I'm very excited for us to finally be booking Raw as well. So we're covering almost the whole spectrum. NXT is still up in the air, we are covering the whole spectrum of WWE now, and
we're slowly growing the fantasy booking network.
Yeah.
Not like the network of like shows we cover.
Yeah. Tune into that every Friday. We just had our draft yesterday, so we're getting right into season 3. And it'd be really cool if you tuned into that as well. It's right on the same feed as Mikey's Indy 500. And I'm sure you'll love it just as much as you love this show. And with all the plugs out of the way, thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for joining me on another lap, and adios.
Yes.
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.